quarterback under pressure. He'll dance around. He'll escape. He'll go to the far side. Taken down by Alabama. And that is going to be the ball game. Goodness gracious. What a day. What a day. What a day.
What a day indeed, as Alabama barely escaped the swamp with a win over the Florida Gators. And now, as autumn is officially upon us, it's time to put down your pumpkin spice whatever, hold off on apple picking, I guess, and feel the heart of this absurd college football season. So today, gentleman and scholar Spencer Hall deconstructs the SEC and the Big Ten and the Suez Canal and scented candles and, of course, Arby's. I'm Pablo Torre. It's Friday, September 24th. This is ESPN Daily. Spencer Hall, before we get into week four of the college football season, I do want to confess something.
Sure.
I watched Alabama, Florida last Saturday on mute from a bar in New York City, which I feel like is kind of like watching Dunkirk on a cell phone. Like, this is not how this thing was meant to be consumed.
No, you consumed it wrong.
Spencer Hall is a contributor to the SEC Network and the co-host of the Shutdown Fullcast podcast.
I don't know what the equivalent is. Oh, this is gas station sushi. That's what you had, right? Or you had barbecue from Brooklyn. You had French food from Ohio. That's what you had. Go back and watch it again. It was a great game. It was a great game. Well, I was completely thrilled with it.
Well, this is the thing, Spencer. I checked the box, but I didn't really get the authentic experience as you just outlined for me. But I want to know how you consumed this game, what it was like. Because look, number 11 Florida falls behind number 1 Alabama to catch everybody up here, 21-3. And then Florida storms back. Nick Saban is, I assume, internally freaking out, if not externally, is holding on, trying to hold on for dear life, and they fall short to Alabama, 31-29, at the Swamp in Gainesville. What were you thinking and feeling as a diehard, historically troubled Florida Gator alum and fan?
Historically troubled is a great way to just describe the MO in general here for me. But as a Florida fan, I was really happy with the game because I try to put it in the long perspective of what you're going up against when you play Alabama, and that is a historical dynasty unlike anything we've seen in modern college football. So if you are outright beating them, that's superb. You probably got kind of lucky. But if you have done what Florida did, which is to stay in the game, run for over 200 yards, and do all of that without getting five turnovers, most of Alabama's upsets in the Nick Saban era have involved the team just freaking out and coughing up the ball four or five times, and have involved a performance by a, you know, mold-breaking and or rule-breaking kind of quarterback. Somebody who takes a tremendous amount of chances and who in one game might be completely irresponsible, but against Alabama, sometimes those work out. None of that happened for Florida. This was steady. This was methodical. It was on the ground. And really the weirdest thing that happened to Florida, one, Florida let a ball bounce out of the end zone and out at the one, which was not an optimal special teams play.
That ball was muffed on a fair catch.
Oh, boy.
And it rolled out to the 1 yard line.
That's not the spot that Florida's offense wanted to start in.
The other thing was we missed an extra point. Now, the first one was interesting because Florida got the ball at the one and then drove 99 yards on an Alabama defense. Go look up the number of times that's happened. So you can count it on one hand. It's pretty minimal. Second, they managed to miss an extra point. If they had not missed that extra point and had gone for two at the end, they would have been tied. So these are two teams that I can just point to the data and go, they ain't that far apart at this point. They're not. There's nothing separating them. And what I think has Nick Saban maybe slightly more concerned than usual. You said, oh, Nick's freaking out. Nick's always freaking out. That's why they're good. What has to concern him specifically at this point is that Alabama's allowing serious yardage in the run game. And that is cardinal rule one of Nick Saban defense is to funnel all runs to the middle and stop them. This goes back to his days with the Browns under Bill Belichick, that they got run all over in one game. And it was like, we're never doing that again. We're going to invent an entirely different system and way of doing things so that that never happens to us at any level ever again. And by and large, it hasn't happened to them in Alabama. And that's what's happening now. And that's what makes this particularly worrisome. I mean, if anyone can fix this too, it's Alabama. Believe me, they have the number of resources devoted to this where
sure.
If it is fixable, they can do that.
So the Alabama kimono, though, it does feel like it's opening, Spencer, this week and the week before that, because what we got, this high-stakes controversy that we got, that consumes the Alabama program still. I mean, when Jordan Battle, the defensive back at Alabama, let out, I guess it's a secret about Nick Saban,
mm-hmm.
what Nick Saban likes to say to make himself and others laugh, which then led to Marlon Humphrey, the Ravens cornerback and Alabama alum, taking credit then for the joke in question.
Saban is a good jokester, and I guess I'm just happy I left my mark with the guy. So that's my comment on it.
And then Mac Jones confirming the rumors this week on WEEI, of all places, of course, because that's where the story goes next.
You know, he's serious, and then he'll be like, hey, you know, whatever. And then he'll just hit you with one of those jokes, and you'll just catch it out of the blue, and you're just kind of like, whoa, that just happened.
How surprised were you to learn that Nick Saban is a D's guy?
Not. Because Nick has always had, and I say this as somebody who appreciates good profanity, but Nick's always had a foul mouth on the practice field. He is not a Tom Osborne coach who's like, I will not yell, I will not curse. That's not how we do things at Nebraska. No. This man at every single stage has had a gloriously salty mouth. He is as close to a football Ahab as we have. If you read Moby Dick, Ahab speaks in various codes. He's very good at code switching. He sometimes speaks in the language of the sailors. Like, there's parts of Moby Dick where he walks in and he's like, ah, boys, swab the decks, me hearties, ha ha ha. And then he'll go and, you know, like, talk to God on the back deck and be like, you know, what, my maker, have you created for me this demon that I hunt? You know, like, that's very much Nick, because Nick will do this thing where he's going, hey, you know, what we really need to do is create an organization. We need to, you know, make sure that we've got processes in hand so people understand motivation. You know, he'll do this very corporate management speak, and then he'll go to his players, and he sounds like he just walked right out of the hollers in West Virginia. The man is very good at figuring out how people talk. And he's very good at talking to people at their level in a manner in which they are comfortable.
And I should note, Spencer, that Saban actually addressed all of this himself on his radio show this past week. And he basically said that whatever D's are, they're in the eye of the beholder.
You know, it's to anybody's imagination what this is, what these are. I mean, so it doesn't mean...
Right.
It's whatever you think it is.
Right.
All right. Now, if you think it's something bad, then it's something bad. All right. But it doesn't have to be anything bad. It can be whatever you think it is.
Yeah.
So, and I like to get on Jordan Battle.
All right. So let's discuss the school that's been chasing Alabama kind of like a white whale, because the number two ranked team in the country right now is Georgia, and their defense and their defensive line especially inspired what I think is the most clear-eyed assessment of how college football works that I can remember from Shane Beamer, who's the head coach at South Carolina, right after he got absolutely wrecked by Georgia 40-13.
Other than that, they're really freaking good. That's why they have the top defense in the country. They're hard to run the football on. So there wasn't some magical scheme they came out with tonight. They got five-star recruits everywhere, and they play really physical. Damn.
Just an incredible restaurant review to leave on Yelp. Damn.
Just damn. Damn. It's like this little punctuated damn. Shane also in that, by saying that, when he says, oh man, they got all these five stars, reflexively, because you're always talking out loud for your team's benefit so that they can hear it, it's to let them know, well, one, you got to step it up. But two, everybody who's listening to this on the recruiting trail, playing time available. Playing time is available at South Carolina if you are a three-star who wants to grade up to a four-star, or if you are a four- or five-star in-state who is looking for a place to walk in immediately. Like, you may not be able to do at Clemson because they have so much talent on the roster already. Come on down. Columbia is open for business. That's like the subtext to that. Now, the thing that kicks in there is depth, and that's where Georgia really starts to kill you because they're real deep. They've got guys behind guys behind guys, and they're all 4 and 5 stars, particularly along the defensive line.
Georgia's goons got goons.
Georgia's goons got goons got goons. It is deep on defense. It is not quite that way on offense, and that is typically where they've managed to come up short. Additionally, I think with Georgia, the word of warning here, they've looked very impressive against competition that is either obviously bad or struggling. So far, though, they've looked great on defense against teams like Clemson. Clemson scored 3 points in their opener against Georgia. We're all ready to anoint Georgia as the greatest defense ever. They're very, very good. Clemson then scored 14 against Georgia Tech. Georgia Tech is not a stress test for anyone at this point. So I don't know. I mean, they haven't proved that much yet. They've looked super impressive. They've obviously garnered horrified reviews from people like Shane Beamer, who are just going to tell you up and down, man, they're real good.
Just damn. So as for actual good football happening this weekend in the SEC, Spencer, we have number 7 A&M, Texas A&M, visiting number 16 Arkansas. And I suppose it's kind of shocking to see Arkansas just in the middle of the AP poll at this point and the coaches poll, for whatever it's worth. What kind of a threat is Arkansas to A&M this weekend, do you think?
They're a serious threat because they play good defense and they run the ball. If they can do that, they can control the tempo of the game. It's not like Texas A&M is, you know, blazing fast anyway, and they've had their own issues on offense. But when somebody can run the ball and you can't stop it, things get very confusing for your football team immediately. The offense has to press, particularly towards the end of the game. If they can play defense and just hold back without rushing a whole bunch of people. Arkansas's plan, and I admire it, is just to get bigger.
Wait, what do you mean by that?
Just to get bigger at positions where people might not have thought size was longer relevant. Like, we used to have gigantic nose tackles in the SEC. Arkansas has kind of gone back to that. They play a largely like a coverage defense that doesn't really rely on sending a whole lot of dudes from a whole lot of angles. They just go back, play their assignments, and beat the crap out of you. And they're really, really good at it. One great way to anchor all of that, though, is with a 6'5", 340-pound nose tackle. And they have a 6'5", 340-pound nose tackle. Have you ever thrown a football over a ladder? Like a full-size stepladder? Now, what if that stepladder also weighed 340 pounds and was just determined to not be moved in the middle? A lot of times that guy is just eating space.
What you're saying is that he's that boat that got stuck in the Suez Canal for like
that's
6 days.
That's his job. Yeah, he's the Ever Given. Like, he's just, yes. That's all the nose tackle has to be in that scheme. He's just got to sit there, turn sideways, and block up the entire canal so that the little, you know, the little boats on the side can do all of the work. That's the idea.
Mm-hmm.
Keep it simple, stupid. Just beat the crap out of people. And usually in football, that'll take you pretty far, especially against an A&M team that has had their own issues with a quarterback injury, a new starter, and slow starts. They had a terrible game against Colorado, man. Like, like a game so bad that it just makes you wonder, like, what did you guys do this week? Then they came back and they beat New Mexico. But, like, be real, beating New Mexico does not prove much.
All right, Spencer, so coming up, I need you to take me to the middle of the country now, where a couple would-be contenders are trying to prove quite a bit.
Delicious meat, nutritious. In the snack that packs a real protein punch, Wonderful Pistachios, one of the highest protein nuts out there. Each 1 ounce serving has 6 grams of protein, giving you over 10% of your daily value. Trust me, I've been eating them like there's no tomorrow all week. Wonderful Pistachios also come in a variety of flavors and sizes, perfect for enjoying with your family and friends or taking them with you on the go. And you, like me, are on the go a lot, taking the kids to school, hopping from meeting to meeting, shopping for groceries, whatever it may be. Well, the good news is not only are Wonderful Pistachios a complete protein providing all 9 essential amino acids, they're also great for all your adventures. So whether you're a pistachio purist who loves cracking open every nut, or you prefer the convenience of no-shells pistachios, Wonderful Pistachios has got you covered. Grab Wonderful Pistachios and elevate your snack game today. Visit WonderfulPistachios.com to learn more.
So arguably the biggest game of the weekend, Spencer, is 12th-ranked Notre Dame and 18th-ranked Wisconsin meeting up at Soldier Field in Chicago. That's self-evidently a huge notable deal, but I find myself almost perversely attracted to Michigan playing Rutgers. These two 3-0 teams, Michigan ranked 19th overall right now, Rutgers, despite being Rutgers, seemingly off to a hot start. What do you think that game is going to look like?
Probably not real great for Rutgers, if we're going to be honest, because Michigan's figured out a neat trick that they don't need to belong to 21st century football right now. They can run the ball. And when you can run the ball, like we were talking about with Arkansas previously, you make everything immensely uncomfortable for your opponent. You control the tempo of the game. You control the clock. You make everyone real tired, and you put pressure on the opposing offense to actually produce. Thus far, we're looking at wins over a really bad Temple team for Rutgers, and they beat Syracuse. And Syracuse is kind of playing like the ghost ship of Syracuse right now. I don't know who's on board there. I don't know why they're not there, and I don't know what's happening, but I don't want to get too close to it because it feels cursed. And Delaware, they beat the Blue Hens, which all respect to the Blue Hens, but Rutgers should probably beat Delaware. So I don't know if they've proven a whole lot. And right now, Michigan is playing really nasty, difficult to deal with football that likes to, you know, sort of establish the game on its own terms. And that's the worst. Like, if you're watching a football game and you just watch one team who says, I would like to make a point, and the other person's like, there's no debate, Captain, here. This is not Lincoln Douglas. You do not get a rebuttal. We're going to run the ball again. Like, that's, I think, what Rutgers is about to face. So if you're perversely interested in this, Pablo, then that is the correct word. You should probably watch Wisconsin-Notre Dame.
Yeah, the other thing about Wisconsin-Notre Dame, by the way, that I am curious about is just that stadium, Soldier Field. I know Wisconsin-Notre Dame haven't played in like 50 years or whatever it is, but the fact that they're playing at a big NFL stadium, what do you think the feel of that building is like? How obviously pro-Notre Dame is it going to be in your predictive capacity here?
I don't think it will be, because Wisconsin people travel and Chicago is rife with them. There's going to be a ton of Wisconsin fans there. I think the vibe's going to be off, because I hate playing in NFL stadiums. I hate it. Hate it. Like, why do you take one of the great assets of this particular sport, which are the unique venues and very loud, colorful fan bases that populate them, and then ask them to travel to the home of the Chicago Bears? I know very little about glory when it comes to modern Notre Dame, but I know they've had more recent success and championships than the Chicago Bears. That building is haunted. And it's haunted by the ghosts of mediocre teams that people somehow paid attention to. I don't really understand it. I don't know why you're having it there. I don't think it does anything to solve anything for either team other than get some additional money. That's why teams play these, because they are incentivized to play in those. Frankly,
shocking.
If I said, wouldn't you want to go play in Madison? Wouldn't you want to go? And I will say this. I've been to South Bend, not my favorite place. Great student section. Mm-hmm. And it's kind of a cool environment. It's cooler than Soldier Field, and Madison's cooler than both put together. That is one of the best places you can go in college football, per every report I have ever heard from anyone who's ever been close to it. It is especially now when you don't have to freeze your butt off. It's not going to be 20 degrees there if you're playing in Madison right now. It'll be heavenly. Go get yourself a bratwurst and hang out by the lake.
Spinning around to what Penn State is up to, Spencer, the other actual, I guess, best team in the Big Ten, they beat Wisconsin, the aforementioned glorious Wisconsin on the road. They beat Auburn. Those are two top 25 teams. What do you see when you watch Penn State?
So far, Penn State is a team that wins games. I don't ever want to undervalue teams that somehow manage to win close games, because that's a skill. You can go a long way on that. They've beaten Wisconsin. There was a 16-10 game where Penn State looked awful in the first half. Much respect to a team that just comes out and is like, yeah, we're going to get every bad play out in the next 30 minutes. All of them. They're going to be terrible. Then in the second half, we'll break out the good stuff, because we know we've only got two quarters worth of good football. Auburn and Penn State, I mean, that game was closer than it should have been, and they were pushed around a little bit by Auburn, who had a 100-yard rusher in Tank Bigsby, and they have to rely on Sean Clifford. If Sean Clifford continues to play pretty well and they stay productive, then I think they could win a lot of games, but they're going to have more help from the run game. They're going to have to be a little more balanced, and they can't really just rely on the QB to show up because, you know, a QB is going to have a bad game, man. He's going to have at least one, if not two games where he's going to be pressured. I'm just picking one at random, not based on previous history or anything. Oh, look, Iowa. You have to go to Iowa. If I had to bet on Sean Clifford having a terrible game and Penn State figuring out a different way to win, it's going to be against Iowa because Iowa is just kind of an obstruction. They're just there to sit in your way and put you in a chokehold and then see if you can get out of it. Like, their playbook's pretty small. It's pretty much just submission holds. But if they get you in one, it's real tricky to get out of. So they're going to have to, like, be more balanced. But more importantly, they know how to win close games. Penn State, to me, is less concerning than what I've seen at Ohio State.
Well, let's get to Ohio State, Spencer, because I have many questions there, but primarily, like, what is happening on defense? Because I understand that Ohio State is ranked number 10. I understand that, look, they're going to be in the college football playoff hunt because that is the thing that they seem to do annually. But this year in particular, I mean, they get upset by Oregon at home in week two. They struggle against Tulsa last week before winning 41-20. But the defense seems to be a special kind of mess right now.
Yeah, let's go ahead and put that in perspective in terms of rushing defense, particularly because pass defense is something that, you know, teams, I think you can see a lot of variance on within a single team season. Ohio State, the one thing you don't want to do is to let the other team run the ball. There's a theme today from me.
Mm-hmm.
Ohio State's run defense, how many digits does it have in terms of rank? I'll give you a clue. There are 130 teams. 130 teams. Is that rank two digits or is it three digits right now?
I'm going to guess it has to be. Are they really like 101? Is that where they are right now?
You've pinned it. They are 101st in the nation right now.
That is
in rushing
yardage. That was a guess, and that is so depressing. Oh, my God.
Mm-hmm. They can score with anyone in the world right now. You know, Stroud's been great at quarterback. They can produce points. Travion Henderson is an unreal talent at running back. Like, they hit a point last game where they just said, well, I'll just give it to Travion. Just let him just get us out of here. Just give it to him. And then, you know, like, if we need more points, we'll just keep giving it to him. He is fiendish and just a delight to watch. That defense is missing basic assignments. It's not like they don't have talent. It just feels like they're missing assignments.
Well, they're missing assignments. Are they also missing a defensive coordinator? Because what is happening? Like, who is calling the plays? Where are they calling the plays? Is all of this? I mean, I thought that you had to have a defensive coordinator call the plays, but maybe you don't now.
I'm going to take you through the pathology of a defensive coordinator crisis in college football. There is an established sort of framework that they teach you in college football punditry medical school about how this happens. You know, it's a diagnostic tree, and it is this. First of all, you start allowing a lot of yards, particularly on the ground. That's bad. And to diagnose that, you say, well, hey, is anyone injured? You know, do we not really? It's not like there's a plague of injuries here. So then what happens? Well, we move next to the coordinator. Everybody immediately wants to fire said coordinator. But before removing them, there are a series of steps to do that. Kerry Combs is nominally the defensive coordinator there. He is a high school coaching legend in Ohio, particularly around Cincinnati, where he did most of his work. He is not necessarily an X's and O's guy. He doesn't have a position that he coaches. That to me says this guy is the recruiter and a really good one and one familiar with everyone in state. So he's now the coordinator and he's not calling the plays anymore. The first thing you do with that is you take play calling and put it in somebody else's hands. Right now it's in an assistant named Matt Barnes's hands. Ryan Day changed that. Also, Kerry Combs is up top. My favorite thing to do when a coach is in trouble and we have to move somebody around, my favorite thing to do is when somebody says, well, we've moved him up to the booth. If you see a guy and you're up at the booth, that's really just making the slaughter even more distant and horrifying, isn't it? It's really just making that 50-yard run bigger and making you feel more helpless.
Having to watch your own demise through binoculars seems especially undignified.
At one point, they had Mike Stoops for Arizona, another coordinator who went through this before eventually coaching elsewhere. They had him up in the booth at one point, and they showed him, and it looked like when you were on the other side of a glass door from your dog, and the dog really wants out, that's what Mike Stoops looked like just banging the glass and rocking back and forth, and just, he looked like he was in hell, man. He looked terrible.
All right, Spencer, after the break, I need to know how this whole name, image, and likeness revolution is looking to you.
When you're on a business trip, you know what completely goes off the rails? Your workout routine, especially when you book a hotel that doesn't have a gym. So what ends up happening is you do a few push-ups and sit-ups in your room, run around the block, or just skip it entirely. Lame. If you just stay at La Quinta by Wyndham, you'll discover there's a fully equipped fitness center at every location. Now you can wake up and power your buys and tries the right way or de-stress with some cardio. The choice is yours. Tonight, La Quinta. Tomorrow, you shine. Book direct at LQ.com.
So Spencer, before all of this name, image, and likeness stuff was officially formalized, there were these questions about how it would hurt college sports. It would maybe undermine what fans loved about amateurism, blah, blah, blah. You know, wait, players are now playing for more than pride. This is a contamination of the purity of a sport. But then you look at the ratings, just one metric for popularity, of course, through the first 3 weeks of the first year of this whole experiment. And not only are, like, you know, these stadiums completely sold out and absolutely losing their mind every time you turn on a television, the ratings are way up. The TV ratings are way up. So what does this tell you about the entire debate over NIL?
I think, one, ratings are up because people are just starved for entertainment. Like, just starved for everything. I think ratings across the board are just going to be up for everything because people are reaching for something that feels like normality. So I think that that makes sense. Like, what's more sort of bread, butter, and hamburgers in America than college football, right?
Yes.
The rankings themselves, when you go, okay, well, how much has NIL changed things? I'm going to look at the 2023 football team rankings from 247 right now in terms of recruiting, because, you know, there's a lot of, you want to look down the road a little bit before we say NIL's changed anything. NIL, in order to change things, would probably sort of take a year or two or three to really sort of kick in terms of how we're going to play deals, how we're going to get people in the door. Well, your top 10 year to year kind of looks like your top 10 every year. There's Oklahoma, Georgia, Notre Dame, Texas A&M, Florida State. You know, the Mike Norvell thing. Struggle has not necessarily thrown off all of their recruiting yet. Florida, Arkansas. To show you how early it is, by the way, at 8th is Boston College. Just ignore that. Outlier. Just throw it off. Like, there's like 4 recruits in their class, right? And these are early, but like, even if you go back to 2022, the top 10 there looks a lot like the top 10 every year, you know, your Penn States, Notre Dame's, Alabama's, Georgia's. So NIL itself, in terms of recruiting, I don't think has changed anything that much. Now, in terms of how players deal with things,
yes,
and in terms of their daily lives, I know it's different. Like, if you ask them, it's been great for them so far. We had Isaiah Spiller on Thinking Out Loud on the SEC Network Mondays at 7. Ding! There's a nice plug.
Well played.
And we had Isaiah Spiller on, and Isaiah Spiller, who has, you know, an SID in there with him, is very rehearsed, very professional. We were searching his Twitter feed to, like, you know, okay, hey, like, hey, let's look and see, like, what he's interested in, who he follows. It's very controlled, right? Almost feels corporate, very safe. But you ask him about it, you know, hey, you sell t-shirts that say it's Spiller time on it. He, like, lights up. He beams. He thinks this is the coolest thing ever, right? He gets, like, way more comfortable. I've loved what that's done for players. I think that's awesome. I think we're still, even now, just dipping our toes in terms of what it will be the road.
No, Spencer, we're scratching the surface of so much potential here. Because, look, in terms of the specific endorsement deals that these players are signing, I mean, there are some perfect ones already. I'm curious, when you survey the landscape, is there one particular brand where you're like, yes, this, I personally endorse this endorsement?
I am going to remember the Ohio State lineman whose nickname is Big Thanos. is his nickname. He is the biggest lineman on the team. But DeJuan Jones for Ohio State.
Yeah, Big Thanos feels a little redundant, but now I'm Google imaging him, and I'm like, no, that seems about right, too.
No, that's Big Thanos, right? And Big Thanos got an endorsement deal that is my favorite by far, which is that DeJuan Jones just got an endorsement for scented candles.
Wait, what flavors? What scents is this 360-pound Big Thanos? What is he lighting in his living room to relax?
Mountain Berry. Mountain Berry is his favorite. Right? He partners with, and again, shouts, this is my favorite thing to do, by the way, is to shout them out. That's right. Go Puff Candles. If you, DeJuan Jones endorses Go Puff Candles, he's a big fan of Mountain Berry. And he says it gets the job done every time. Described on the website as a melange of mountain ripe wild blueberries.
A melange.
So,
yes.
Like, if you think about it, makes sense. He's 6'8, he's 360. He's, you know, their starting tackle. And that's a big bear of a man. What does a bear like more than the smell of fresh berries?
The next question is raised, what does a Georgia quarterback love more than a nice performance quarter zip? Because. Because I'm looking on Twitter. I'm like, wait a minute. Okay, JT Daniels, Heisman candidate, is now endorsing Roback, I believe it's pronounced. And they are, yes, the only quarter zips that he wears. And he said this with this photograph on this ad with his eyes smoldering towards the camera, wearing a performance Q-zip, as apparently they're called, over this white button-down. And he's wearing many rings. And I'm just like, I could not have dreamed this to be more on the nose.
To explain to anyone, one apex of you know, the ideal Georgia lifestyle is to kind of look like a warm weather Jim Nance. There are 19 and 20 year olds who pledge fraternities, and you have a certain set of cultural preferences who really enjoy looking like they're 45. Now, I never understood this when I was 19. I'm like, I'm 19. I should look like I'm 19. Completely not together. I should bear no resemblance to a responsible adult book because I'm incapable of it and because I should enjoy these t-shirts and cargo shorts as long as I can. Sometimes for some of us, that carries over into our 40s. All right. But JT Daniels, like, bless him. Like, JT Daniels came here from USC, and you always kind of go, oh man, how's he going to fit in? Then JT Daniels just rolls up in a quarter zip, looking like a 35-year-old patent attorney playing a quick 18 on Friday. And I thought, man, oh, he's gone full Georgia. This man is devoted to the team.
The last thing that I wanted to... Did you see the Arby's thing?
Which particular thing? There's a lot of Arby's in my world, Pablo.
It's the fact that Arby's is now putting out a call for running backs so they can be Arby's RBs. And like Travion Henderson is now an Arby's RB, and Kyron Williams from Notre Dame is an Arby's RB.
Especially like if you're an Ohio running back, right? If you're at Ohio State, yeah, man, go ahead. Get that Arby's endorsement.
I just love that so much of this boils down to, like, there's all these highfalutin possibilities for, like, you know, presenting sponsorships with giant companies. But a lot of this is just like, man, we could eat for free tonight.
At first, I was going to say, hey, go back to college and think about that. That'd work for me right now. That'd be fine. Because part of an endorsement, like, my endorsement deal is going to feel a little bit better if it's like, does it come with lunch? Doesn't matter the company, right? Just, does it come with lunch? Yeah. I'm feeling better about this already. Okay, let's sign. Let's do it. Let's do it up.
Spencer Hall, thank you for sharing your name, image, and likeness with us.
Hey, anytime.
I'm Pablo Torre, and this has been ESPN Daily. Our show is produced by Alexander Hyacinth, Mike Johns, Steve Martin, Ryan Nantel, Mike Philbrick, Andy Tennant, Eve Troe, Chris Tuminello, and Aaron Vale. Special thanks this week to Aish Kumar, Andres Soto, Julia Faust, Christian Gardner, Max Brodsky, and Jackson Ugelo. I'll talk to you Monday.